This episode is made possible by MailChimp. Ever heard of a clustomer? It's the result of marketers grouping customers with different behaviors into one big mess. But with MailChimp, you can use real-time behavior data to personalize emails for every customer based on their browsing and buying behavior, turning your customers into customers. Intuit MailChimp, the number one email marketing and automations brand. Visit MailChimp.com/personalize for more information. Based on competitor brands, publicly available data on worldwide numbers of customers in 2021, 2022, availability of features and functionality vary by plan, which are subject to change.
And I think that $7 price was still a great value for ad-free, but clearly as they move to an ad-supported tier, they need to get more customers to sign on to that, and raising the price of the ad-free tier is one way to push those who don't want to pay that much into the ad-supported tier.
Hello everyone, happy Halloween, and welcome to the Great Big Advertising Media and Retail Quiz of the Month, October 2023. A special episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. This is our monthly show that discusses the biggest trends of the moment and newest research and bundles it up into a quiz with some analysis sprinkled in. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson. How does this episode work? It's a big game show. You may have listened to this one before. We play it every month, and three of our analyst teams, media and advertising, that's one of them, retail, that's another, and social and tech, that's a third, they face off. We're keeping a running score. At the end of the year, we crown a winning team who will win a gift card each. That'd be brutal if we just gave you one $20 gift card to share between like eight people. A gift card each, that's right, we splurge. And of course, you claim the Pulitzer Prize of the analyst world, the Victoria Cup, a trophy designed in pottery class by our very own Victoria, who edits the show. V, how's it coming?
She's a work in progress, but she's a beauty.
Have you started yet? You haven't started, have you?
Maybe.
Okay, good. Perfect. All right, we'll buy something from somewhere, because V hasn't begun. The quiz has three rounds. Whoever has the most points wins the gold medal and three super duper points for your team's running total. Second place takes the silver and two super duper points. Third place gets you a look of disbelief and just one super duper point.
That's much better than shame.
Yeah. What a waste of everyone's time. Just the 1 point. Let's meet this month's contestants who are trying to compete for that 1 point and two and perhaps even three. They're representing the different teams. We start with a chap who's repping the digital advertising and media team, our briefings analyst based in New York City. It's Daniel Konstantinovich.
Hello. I'm excited to hopefully not embarrass myself.
Hey, fella. Welcome to the quiz. Danny's first time on the quiz. We're also joined by two of the folks who have been on before. One of them is representing the retail team, senior analyst based in Austin, Texas. It's Sky Cannabis.
Hey, Marcus. Great to be back. And
hello,
hopefully
hello.
Repeat.
Yes, Sky's been crushing. Thank God, because Susie's on her team and she's been abysmal. We're also joined by the captain of the social and tech team, principal analyst based in New Jersey. It's Yuri Wormser.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, everyone. I will not do any trash talk.
You can. Yuri's been killing it. An all-star of sorts for the quiz. They're the three people we have for you today. Listeners, you can be your own team if you like. Keep track of your points total and match your score against these three folks at the end to see if you beat them. Before we start, we check in on the overall team scores thus far. We started the quiz in April, so after 6 months, six quizzes. We have the digital ad and media team, that's Danny's team, and the retail team, that's Sky's team. They're both in joint second place with 11 super-duper points apiece and currently out in first place, mainly thanks to Yuri, is the social and tech team with 14 super-duper points. So that's the overall super-duper point scores. But we, of course, start the in-game scores with everyone on zero. Victoria, who edits the show, produces the show, will be also keeping score of the show because Stuart, again, has shirked his responsibilities. What does he do all day? Answer... very little. Let's move to our first round. I never knew that. In this round, we discuss the biggest stories of the moment with a question tied to each. Folks have 5 seconds to send me their answers via Slack. 1 point if you're correct. You get nothing if you're not. Four questions. Let's start. First story, first related question. So number one, folks, talking about AI rules. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, of Connecticut and Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, are preparing to announce a sweeping framework, apparently, to regulate AI. And Americans seem like they're ready for it. 56% said they supported federal regulation, according to the Artificial Intelligence Policy Institute. The question is, folks, at the start of the month, start of October, which American actor warned that an ad that appears to be fronted by them was in fact an AI fake? Which actor warned that an ad that appeared to be fronted by them was an AI fake? Answers coming in. Yuri, did you send yours in, Yuri? Oh, you're typing.
No idea.
Well, I had to think about it for a second. I was like, oh, I know it.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know if I got it.
So Danny says Tom Hanks. Sky says Bradley Cooper. And Yuri says, no idea, Denzel Washington.
I threw out just a random neck.
The answer is Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is the correct answer. So 1 point to Danny. So staying on this for a second on the AI rules thing, it does seem like things are moving too fast. Apparently for every 9 American voters who want to slow down the development of AI, just one of them wants to speed it up. So for every 9 who say slow things down, 1 says speed it up. That's according to the AI Policy Institute as well. Any thoughts, folks, on kind of the state of AI, how it's kind of taken over, particularly our industry, and what we think of when, if ever, we'll see some kind of regulation?
I think the pace of AI regulation is going to be pretty slow, especially with like the current lockup that, you know, the House just went through. Federal regulation around tech has just kind of always been slow in the US, and we're seeing a lot more action on a state level, which could lead to these like really fractured, scattered rules like the ones that exist around data privacy.
But everything else.
To your point, yeah, AI is like not a very popular technology. In a lot of industries, the primary like feeling around AI is concern that it's going to take jobs, replace jobs. It's certainly what I see in digital advertising, is a lot of fear that it's going to lead to a lot of job losses. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, a lot of people want the pace of development to slow down. But I feel like once it's out the gate, it's really hard to rein something like that in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I basically agree with that. I think one difference between data privacy and AI is the national security issue. I think a lot of people are worried about China and how algorithms could be leaky with their data or have biases or stuff like that. So I think you're going to have some sort of, you know, regulation around AI technology and the spread of AI technology, and also around data security. I think that there'll be consensus around that, but some of the other stuff we might have might take longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one's holding their breath with some AI rules, even if we perhaps, yeah, need them sooner rather than later. Let's move to our second question, talking about Second Prime Day. I didn't even mean to do that. Second question, Second Prime Day. Moving on. Amazon's Second Prime event of the year, Prime Big Deals Days, took place on October 10th and 11th in an attempt to kick off the holiday shopping season. This year's event sales grew 16% year-on-year versus last year's October event, according to a Beauty Matter piece. Advertiser spend grew 30%. The article noted that these fall Prime events still not reached the size of the main July Prime Day, which had sales that were over 50% as large. But the question is, this year's event was called Prime Big Deals Days. What was last year's event called? Last year's fall Prime event. What was it called? Answers coming in. So, Danny says Prime Day 2, the sequel, apparently.
With a question mark.
Question mark. Sky says early access, and Yuri says Prime Little Deals? Question mark. I wish I could give you a point for that answer to you and to Danny, but Sky is correct. Prime Early Access Sale. So Sky gets the point. Good hours, gents. Sky, you cover retail for us. Any thoughts on maybe even not how this event went, but just like the positioning of this event after the second year, kind of where we're at?
Well, I think it's permanently reset the holiday calendar to get consumers conditioned to start shopping and looking for deals in October and earlier in October, not even after Halloween or towards Halloween, but now with the Prime Deal Day starting October 10th. And we saw competing retailers like Target and Walmart launching their sales around the same time or a few days earlier to try to get in on the consumer anticipation for deals. I think it's a big part of Amazon's future, you know, e-commerce plans, and that they will continue to do this, and that's going to continue to reset the holiday calendar, push a lot, at least some of the shopping forward. But still, the vast majority of consumers do wait a little bit longer to do most of their shopping towards the Cyber 5, Black Friday, and after Black Friday, and into the last couple of weeks of the holidays, especially when budgets are tighter. I think more consumers will be willing to wait longer to see when they can get the best deal.
Yeah.
And the way Amazon sets up with its, you know, holiday returns period, which I think can run into January, that will certainly give consumers the impetus maybe to buy earlier, but also if they find a better deal later to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's a great take. Let's move to our third question, folks. Microsoft finally bought Activision Blizzard. Microsoft, who owns Xbox, has completed its $70 billion takeover of Call of Duty maker Activision Blizzard in the gaming industry's biggest ever deal. This was the largest consumer tech acquisition since AOL bought Time Warner in January 2000. If you can't remember back that far, January 2000, Stuart Little topped the US box office. Great movie. The deal was first announced in January 2022, so closing on 2 years ago. And we'll see Activision's best-selling franchises, Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, and Candy Crush, help to strengthen, to bolster Microsoft's video game business. The question is, as part of the reworked deal, Microsoft handed some of the rights to distribute Activision's cloud games outside the EU to which French video game publisher for the next 15 years? As part of the reworked deal, Microsoft handed some of the rights to distribute Activision's cloud games to which French video game publisher for the next 15 years? Any thoughts from Sky or Yuri's
face? Yuri looks stressed.
Oh, this is one I know. I just can't remember the name of it.
I'm also just trying to think of which one is the French video game publisher, which there is one that's the big one, right?
There is, yeah.
I'm white flag for me on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yuri's going to come out of this looking like he's just done two terms of a U.S. presidency. all right. We've got Danny, who has the correct answer, which is Ubisoft. It's Ubisoft, which I can see Yuri and Sky. Nuva couldn't think of Ubisoft as the answer. Yeah, a huge deal. Microsoft's deal is nearly three times bigger than when Microsoft bought LinkedIn, which was a big enough deal. So this is, it's an absolute huge deal.
I wrote about this. I just couldn't remember the name.
Yeah. No trouble. You write about a lot, Yuri. I don't know how you guys remember anything, to be perfectly honest, the pace of things. Let's move to our final question of the round. Netflix. The streaming giant's recent earnings show that the company is working on a number of initiatives to try and make more money. They're raising the prices of its streaming tiers by a few dollars, some of them. It's getting ready to roll out a new ad initiative where users binging a show can watch a commercial-free episode sponsored by an advertiser. That's supposed to be coming. They're building Netflix House venues that will feature a mix of retail, dining, and live experiences. Netflix is also getting ready to stream its first live sporting event. But what is it? What is the sporting event it is getting ready to live stream? Why is this not a video podcast? My God, this is so good. So Danny's in, Sky's in, Yuri's in. So Danny says, a mix of golf and Formula One players, are they golfing? Sky says baseball, question mark. Yuri says cricket World Cup. The answer is the Netflix Cup, which is a golf tournament. So Danny gets the point. Featuring golf pros and F1 drivers, airing November 14th on 6 p.m. Eastern. If you want to watch, taking place at the Wynn Golf Club in Las Vegas.
I couldn't remember if it was just golfing or if it was like a swap. So the F1 drivers are golfing and the golfers are driving
that
really fast cars.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty funny.
Dangerous. You know? but very yes. cool. But they should look into that. I'd watch that. I'm not watching a golf tournament. I'm not Blake. Jesus. That's right, Blake. Nobody watches golf. It's a terrible sport. I respect it. Probably the most difficult thing in the world, but also terrible to watch. Okay, after the first round, we look at the scores. Danny jumps out to an early lead. 3 points for him, one for Sky. And Yuri, if you'd seen his face, you would know that he has 0 points. But he is really trying to get off the to get on the board. We'll see if he can in the second round. Round two, spoilt for multiple choice. This is the multiple choice round, where we dig a little deeper into one of the topics from round one. This month, we'll focus this round on Netflix. So all Netflix-related questions in this multiple choice round. 1 point for a correct answer, 3 questions in the round. So, question one. Netflix is raising its prices, standard and standard with ads. They're going to stay the same, but basic is going from 10 to 12, and premium will go from $20 to $23. Question is, which major streaming service has raised the price of its ad-free US subscription service the most since 2019? Which major streaming service has raised the price of its ad-free US subscription service the most since 2019? The answers are, is it A, Apple TV Plus, B, Disney Plus, or C, Peacock? Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus, or Peacock? Okay, so Danny says B, Sky says B, that's Disney Plus, Yuri says Apple TV Plus. The correct answer is Disney Plus. Disney Plus is the correct answer. Yuri is killing it. Disney Plus has, the price has actually doubled from $7 to $14. We have a really good chart on this, which I think featured in Ross's report. It might have featured other places as well, but Ross Benish, who covers a lot for us, but also writes about TV and video. And shows all the price changes from basically 2010 up until now, how that ad-free tier has changed price over time. And they've all gone up, that's for sure. But Disney Plus has gone up the most.
Disney Plus was a great deal. You know, they launched right before the pandemic, and when everyone had their kids stuck at home, paying $7 a month for some entertainment here and there was a really good value. And I think that $7 price was still a great value for ad-free. But clearly, as they move to an ad-supported tier, they need to get more customers to sign on to that. And raising the price of the ad-free tier is one way to push those who don't want to pay that much into the ad-supported tier.
Yeah. Apple is an interesting one. That was A, right? Was Apple TV, right?
Yes. Yeah. They went from $5 in 2019 to $7 today.
Yeah. And they actually just raised it again. So now it's 10. So this past
now
week,
it's 10.
It was
interesting.
So they've only gone up about $5 a month in, all that time, and still no ad supported tier. You know, if they keep making the ad free version more expensive, you know, that could be an indicator that an ad supported tier is coming. They've also started doing, they've made big hires for an ad supported tier. They've made advertising around their multi-billion deal with Major League Soccer, like a major focus for the company. So it could still be on the way, but as of yet, still no ad supported tier on Apple TV. They're like the last holdout.
Yeah. All right, folks, let's move to question two. Still about Netflix. They just reported their Q3 earnings, and the company noted that revenue grew 8%. That's the fastest it's grown in a quarter in the last year and a half. So pretty good. We think Netflix will make $800 million from ads this year. But the question is, how much does our forecast team expect Netflix to make from ads next year? So $800 million this year. How much next year? Is it A, $1.1 billion, B, $1.8 billion, or C, $2.3 billion? 1.1, 1.8, or 2.3. This year, we think it's 800 mil. So, Danny says A, Sky says A, and Yuri says A. The correct answer is A, $1.1 billion. Well played, folks. Good guesses. I don't think I would have guessed that. I mean, I've seen the number so much that I might have, because we've talked about Netflix recently, and I've seen this before, but surprising, though, that there, I mean, 800 million is, it's not nothing. It's still 800 million, and 1.1 billion next year is not nothing. It's 1.1. But with Netflix, and they got off to a bit of a shaky start, but are we surprised that it's just 1.1 billion next year from ads?
I mean, I'd say yes and no. You know, there was a lot of demand for Netflix to launch an ad-supported tier, and advertisers had been pressuring the company to do it for years and years and years. But they launched it, you know, kind of at a tough time. Like, several months after they launched, there's a major writers and actors strike that makes it hard to produce new content and sell ads on it. At the same time that they launch it, just about every other streaming service is launching an ad-supported tier, so there's a lot more competition in the market suddenly, and interest rates are higher, so spending, you know, is not as fast and loose on advertising. So all these things kind of have made it slower than I think even Netflix wanted. There were some stories around the spring that they were frustrated with the pace of sales. They had to lower the cost of their ad slots, of their CPMs. They were around like 55. They had to lower them to 45 or lower. Yeah, I think they certainly want it to be higher and are frustrated that it's not higher. But I don't know. It's not that surprising that it hasn't reached like a meteoric number yet.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great point. I think in the context of the overall digital ad market, they will be doing pretty well and outpacing growth in digital ad spend on video.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. According to Antenna, from June to September of this year, Netflix's ad-supported tier has gone from 3% of total US subscriptions to 6%. So it's going up, still small. We'll see where it can get to. Move to our final question of the round, question 3, still on Netflix. During Netflix's earnings, the streamer said that it had added nearly 9 million new subscribers in July, August, and September. 9 million across those 3 months. That's the most in 3 years in a quarter since the windfall of Q2 2020, when we were all trapped inside. But despite this, our senior director of briefings, Jeremy Goldman, notes that YouTube now eclipses Netflix as the preferred platform for teen video consumption. Netflix has been eclipsed by YouTube as the preferred platform for teen video consumption, according to a Piper Sandler survey. The question is, how much time do Netflix viewing adults spend watching Netflix per day? How much time do Netflix viewing adults spend watching Netflix per day, according to our forecasts? Is it 1 hour, 1 hour and 10 minutes, or 1 hour and 23 minutes? How much time do Netflix viewing adults spend watching Netflix per day? 1 hour, 1 hour and 10, 1 hour and 23.
Thank God this is multiple choice, by the way, because I the number I was thinking was nowhere close.
Danny says, what were you thinking?
I was like 47 minutes.
Oh, lower. Oh, interesting. Lower. So Danny says 110. Sky said that's B. Sky says 123. That's C. And Yuri also joins Danny by saying B. The correct answer is A. 1 hour somehow. I thought it was, I'm surprised you said 47 minutes, Danny, because I was like, can I choose like 5 hours a day? Because one seems low and it's not really moving that much at all. So yeah, 1 hour a day for Netflix viewership. All right, folks, we are at the end of round two, sport for multiple choice. We check in on the scores. Danny, still out in front with 5, Sky with 3, Yuri on the board with 1. Yes.
Progress. I'm top.
There's a comeback brewing.
That's right.
All to play for. It's true. All to play for in round 3. Lots of points to give away. So let's get there. Round 3 is closest wins. This is the round where the closest guess wins the most points. 3 questions. Closest guess for each gets 3 points. Second closest 2. Furthest gets 1. And we are revisiting some of the topics from round 1. So no more Netflix, but we are going to talk about AI, shopping, and Microsoft and Activision. The first question, though, is on AI rules and regulating AI development. So here's the question. Closest wins. What share of Americans believe the US should have already begun regulating AI development and use? So I'll say that question again, then there are a few notes. So what share of Americans believe the US should have already begun regulating AI development and use? So a few notes here. 1, 13% of folks said don't know. So you're guessing out of 87. So don't go higher than 87. And some of the options here, people could have chosen, should have already started within the next year, within the next 5, within the next 10, within the next 20, more than 20, or never. So they are the options, just to give you some context. But what share of Americans believed they should have already begun regulating AI development and use, the US, that is?
So wait, that's out of
87%.
And out of those different options? Yes. Some were forward-looking some were past-looking. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so different shares for each. 13% of people said don't know, so get rid of that 13% from your answer. It's an overly complicated question, I will admit. Okay. So, Danny says 60%, Sky says 75%, and Yuri says 46%. The correct answer is 50%. So, Yuri is closest. He takes 3 points. Danny is second closest. He takes 2. And Sky takes 1 with her answer of 75%. Yeah, 50% of people. So, some of the other options. Within the next year was 13%. Within the next 5 was 12%. And then some smaller shares for some of the others. What do you guys make of it? I was surprised to see just half of people. I mean, 13% said don't know, but half of people saying they should have already started. It seems like some folks, a quarter of people, said within the next year to 5 years. Very patient.
I think people are just getting a handle right now on AI. So I think there obviously a lot of people want some sort of regulation, but it doesn't surprise me like the majority don't yet.
And maybe that quarter understand Danny's point that regulation moves pretty slowly and might not have been expected to have already been in place, given that AI, the recent AI boom, is just about a year old.
Yeah, that's a good point. Some interesting numbers by the demographics as well. Baby boomers, so 59% of them, 24% percentage points more likely than the younger folks, the Gen Zers, to believe the US should have already begun regulating AI development and use. So baby boomers, 59% of them said it should have already started versus just 35% of the Gen Zers. Let's move to our second question here. How are we looking on the scores? Yuri and Sky now tied with 4. Danny out in front with 7, though. So still all to play for. Move to our second question. And we're talking about, well, we were talking about second Prime Day. Now we're going to be talking about holiday expectations. So last year, holiday season sales grew 3.9%. But what do we expect from holiday season sales this year to the nearest decimal, please? So 3.9% growth in holiday season sales last year. What do we expect this year to the nearest decimal? Okay, so Danny says 4.1%, Sky says 4.5%, and Yuri very pessimistically says 2.1%. Yuri, I would have guessed that too, to be honest, mate, given a lot of the headlines that you read about how bad things seem to be at the moment. But Sky is closest. She might have actually conducted the forecast because it is 4.5% on the nose. So Sky gets 3 points. Danny, second place with 4.1. And then Yuri gets to the last point with 2.1%. Sky, talk us through that number and why you think our forecasting team landed on that rather hopeful number, a bit higher than last year.
Yeah, the 4.5% number, it's one I look at on a regular basis, which is how I know it off the top of my head. But, you know, things are looking a little bit better. The consumer has been very resilient this year. The jobs market is still holding steady. Inflation has eased off, even though prices are higher than they were, you know, pre-pandemic by a significant amount in a lot of categories. Mm-hmm. But I think the early results we've seen from Amazon's Big Deals Day and continued, you know, resilience in consumer spending. And we now have data that consumer savings have not been quite as depleted as they were previously thought to have been. So there's still a good cushion of cash that American consumers, particularly higher income consumers, are sitting on and will continue to spend over the holidays.
Interesting. Okay. All right, folks, let's move to our final question and we'll check the scores. So Danny 9, Sky 7 and Yuri 5. So Yuri could steal second, Sky could steal first and Danny could fall from the top spot. So there could still be some movement. Places aren't locked up yet. Let's see how it goes. Question 3 of this round, Microsoft, Activision, Blizzard. We're revisiting that story and we're talking about gaming's share. So what do I mean by that? Well, Sarah E. Needleman and Tom Doten of the Wall Street Journal ran the numbers and adding Activision would have made gaming overall about what percent of Microsoft's revenue in its latest fiscal year? So Microsoft added Activision. And so how much would that have swelled its gaming revenues to if you take its last fiscal year? So basically what share of Microsoft is gaming as a result of this deal? Okay. right. So Danny says 15%. Sky says 27%. And Yuri says 22%. The correct answer is 10%. Correct answer is 10%. So Danny takes 3. Yuri takes 2. And Sky takes 1. Yeah, it's shockingly low, given that this was like the biggest consumer tech deal, you know, in the last like 23 years. And it's like the biggest deal in Microsoft's 50-year history. Yeah, 7% of the company was gaming, and it went up to 10% with this deal. So large consumer tech acquisition in over 20 years, Microsoft's largest deal in 50-year history, but only bumped gaming revenue from 7% of the company's total to 10.
Yeah.
So imagining that things will improve.
As soon as I put down 22%, I was thinking that's going to be high. And the reason is that Microsoft just has these huge revenues from cloud and productivity tools, mm-hmm. and advertising. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, gaming is a really huge market and there's a lot of spending there. But I think the major impact of the acquisition is going to be felt out over several years. Gaming is like a really high cost sector, really long production times on games. Maybe mobile games can be considered separately. But I think it also shows that these tech mergers are just inflating a lot in value, you know, and I'm sure that there's a lot of behind the numbers, probably, you know, negotiations.
But you said behind the numbers, pun intended.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes. I'll take it.
Yeah, I think Microsoft also was willing to pay a premium because they're trying to shift to cloud computing, cloud gaming. Mm-hmm. And I think having that to his Activision titles was going to be a pretty fundamental part of that. So definitely we're willing to pay a lot, probably more than most other people for it. So
yeah.
Yeah. And M&A in the video game industry has also ramped up a lot in the last several years. Microsoft has acquired a lot of companies outside of Activision Blizzard. So wouldn't surprise me if companies looking to be acquired or make a deal like this are, you know, pumping the price up to try and get the most they can, because clearly there's demand for acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very nice, folks. Well, that is the end of the quiz of the month. We check the scores and I always get so confused with these scores. Oh, so V, what's this?
So the total after round 3 is just round 3. And then the final total is rounds 1, 2, and 3 put together. So like, okay.
Oh,
so
like, running total.
This is running. Oh, this is okay. Running total. And then this is final total. Because we don't need a tiebreak.
Okay. Yeah, we do.
There's a very clear winner today.
There is a very clear winner today. It's Yuri. Oh, yes. I'm kidding. Yes, there is a very clear winner. And we can tell you that very clear winner is Danny. Congratulations to Danny.
Thank you. Thank
he
you.
Had 20 points. Sky Woo. Had 12. And Yuri, slow out the gate, but came up with 8 points. Respectable 8.
Got the constant pace.
Yeah, exactly. Congratulations to Danny for bringing home 3 super duper points. Let's check the leaderboard. So Danny brings the gold medal and 3 super duper points to advertising and media. Sky brings 2 super duper points to her retail team and the silver. And then Yuri brings 1 super duper point and the bronze to social and tech. So the totals, retail is currently in 3rd place. Susie's going to be furious. Yes. 3rd place, 13 points for retail. 2nd place, 14 points for advertising and media. And in 1st place still, social and tech with 15 points. So really close, 13, 14, and 15 points respectively. Social and tech out in front. Advertising and media in 2nd. Retail is in 3rd. So all to play for. Fantastic game this month, folks. We will see you in November. We've got 2 months left to see who's going to win the Victoria Cup, which hasn't even been started. But the gift cards do exist, I think. We probably haven't bought those either. Maybe we'll just say thanks for playing. But thank you for playing for this month's episode. To all my guests, thank you, of course, to Yuri.
Glad to be here.
He took the bronze.
Actually, I'll take that back.
Yeah. Your face said otherwise, and I could see in your tone you were trying your hardest to be genuine, and I completely understand. Thank you to Sky, who came in 2nd.
Thanks, Marcus. Hope to be back.
She took the silver, absolutely. Thank you to Danny, who took home the gold for advertising and media.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll send you my address for you to send the extremely large check.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Stuart, get on.
Well, we'll talk about it after.
We don't have to. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much to those folks. Thank you to Victoria, who apparently does everything because Stuart constantly is on vacation. I thought he was working. What is he doing? Nobody knows. Thank you to James. He does some stuff. Appreciate him. Thanks to everyone listening to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Intuit MailChimp. This Thursday, we will tell you all about our giveaway. So make sure you tune in for free things on Thursday. We'll be back in November for the next quiz at the end of November. But you can hang out with Sarah Lebo tomorrow if you like for the Behind the Numbers Reimagining Retail Show, where she'll be speaking with Jeremy Goldman and also Sky, who you just heard from, all about how search is changing how we shop.
I would just like to state that I did make a Victoria cup.
Did you?
I was a little bit too ambitious.
Okay.
And I have to
revisit
my original sketch.
Oh.
And have somebody help me with the geometry because it was a little too top heavy.
Uh-huh.
I was trying to figure out / have somebody at the studio teach me how to do plaster molds.
Hello.
So I was just going to buy a plastic microphone and then submerge my hand and make like a plaster mold of my hand holding a microphone. But I think that's a little bit too ambitious also, and already complicates the issues I'm having with the bass. There's a reason I'm not an engineer, let's just put it that way.